What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
So I thought this video would be a good accompaniment to my last video. For those of you who might have been wondering, why does he care about black male, white female relationships so much? The truth is, I don't. I care about your freedom of choice as a black man. Furthermore, I understand that there are racist white women out there as well, but they're easy to spot, and for the most part, a racist white woman will just avoid you. Oftentimes, it's the enemies we don't see that create the real problems in our lives. Our biggest threat and our most covert enemy oftentimes looks like us. And it goes back to that old boxing saying, it's the punches you don't see that knock you out. It reminds me of that old show, Samurai Champloo. There was a character on there named Mugen, and his main weapon of choice was a sword. But if you've seen the show, you know he had a hidden dagger on him that he would use when the sword wasn't working for him. He called it his ace in the hole. Traditionally, going back to the plantation days and the slave trader days, white men have used black women as their ace in the hole to thwart our initiatives. This isn't really taught to black men in the mainstream. That's why I was so disgusted by that Antonio Speaks video, because to be honest with you, Nick Fuentes is out there. White men are trying to build a full-on Fourth Reich here in the country. We don't have time for any more black female panderers. We already wasted well over a decade on the Dr. Umars of the world, the Manosphere 1.0, 2.0. Really, things started to change with Kevin Samuels, and I also commend channels like Accountable Commentary, Hardcore Tito, History Student. That's the direction we need to go in. Either Keisha is going to be an asset to us, or she needs to get out of the way. That's it. I don't care about anything else she has to say. We don't have time. It's just that simple. We as black men need to build. We need to come together, and we need to build. And if a black woman can't get behind you and support building your initiative, then they're of no value to us. We need to stop falling for their hustles. Like, one of their more recent hustles was that whole, I need to find a man who can take care of me so that I can rest in my femininity. Well, you have to think to yourself, if you're out here breaking your back, working three shifts, and she's sitting at home doing nothing, doesn't that sound a lot like a plantation? I mean, I've seen black men out here who have live-in girlfriends who aren't even having their kids. So what's the point of that? Most other men do work with their women. They're in the trenches fighting together. And you're breaking your back, climbing uphill, carrying a black woman who isn't willing to work with you. Either you're giving her everything, or she doesn't want to be involved at all. We don't have time for that anymore. We need to come together and build so that we have better control over our economic destiny. And I know the Antonio Speaks channels and the FD Signifier channels are going to be, they're going to always be way more promoted and popular than channels like the ones I mentioned or this one. That's okay. YouTube likes those channels because those channels put you back to sleep. Truth is, as black men, political parties don't matter to us. Republicans, Republicans' main concern are white men. Democrats' main concern are white women, liberal white men, and immigrants. You don't have a political party right now as a black man. We would be a lot better off gaining control of a sector of the economy so that we have better control over our economic destiny than simply voting blue no matter who. I hate that old boomer saying. We've been voting blue for the last 50 or 60 years, and we've only done worse as a collective. Now in the South, right now, we have the highest concentration of black people in the country. If enough black men get educated in skilled trades, we could take over those sectors of the economy in that area. That's an economic strategy just off the top of my head that I don't hear anyone talking about. But it's things like that that are going to uplift our people. Not looking for a Democrat to save us. Any channel promoting that is grifting. The truth of the matter is, the only reason Democrats gave black women welfare in the first place was to secure a Democratic voting base that black men had no control over. If they really wanted to empower the black community, they would have subsidized the black entrepreneurs in black communities. That would have allowed them to grow their businesses and scale them out so that they could hire more black people and guarantee more black jobs. But you notice Democrats never want to do anything like that. Reparations could have been a path to that, and Democrats still stubbornly denied it. So no, we don't have a political party. We need to stop with the political talk altogether. It doesn't matter. We need to control market sectors. But I don't want to keep you for too long. So I want to thank Black Women Are the Prize. That's the X user that I saw this clip from for exposing this. And this is no surprise for me. All I see here is one hate group meeting with another over their shared resentment and jealousy of black men. Fortunately, in this day and age, we are not our parents' generation. And I don't think there's anything they can do to really stop a black man with a good head on his shoulders. But I'll leave you with this clip. You're free to make up your own mind about what you're hearing.
So what are the corrections that you're looking for specifically?
Force, because that's the only thing that's going to work.
But I mean, what are you looking for black men to arrive at? A place of understanding of like, what do you want to see?
Well, we believe that there is no hope for them, that we don't believe in changing their minds. We don't, but I'm trying not to say what I really want to say because you're on stage, but if they could not exist, hey, we wouldn't be mad at.
I think for me, I think I want the coddling culture to kind of stop. I think they get validated a little bit too much and they're not held accountable as much as white men, Hispanic men, Asian men. Like, the legal system works in their benefit a little bit more than they think it does. They're seen as the ultimate, like, most oppressed. And I think that that coddling culture needs to stop and they need to be held accountable for their actions.
Because we live in white male patriarchy, white men set what's socially acceptable. So with you all setting what's socially acceptable, the degenerate behavior of black male culture needs to be checked, and there needs to be more, because we're no longer looking for accountability from them because they've proven that they will not take accountability. We need the men who set the culture to make them take accountability by exacting some sort of consequence for perpetrating behaviors that are not socially acceptable, because you all create the socially acceptable behavior.
Food stamps gone. Section 8 gone. All your SNAP and EBT benefits gone. Now you gotta go back to Tyrone. Woo!
Yeah. Starting out with a bang, right? Welcome to another edition of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones. And You are currently listening live from the 215 on Fet Life Station at FetLifeStation.com. That's Fet Life Station, FetLifeStation.com. And you can always catch us rolling out approximately 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Philly Fridays as we represent hard. We represent hard. From the 215, you know what I'm saying? In addition to that, you know, hold on, I gotta drop it. Yeah, I'm feeling myself a little bit. But yeah, we're also on the True Stories Podcast Network, the True Stories Podcast Network. So you can find us anywhere on the atmosphere, on the hemisphere, whatever. You know, cyberspace, whatever y'all want to call it. And it goes without saying, but you already know, you can't leave. You're here with me to rock out for the whole time. So, family, what you just heard was, I believe the brother's name is Max Dick Room. Max Dick Room. And that's the channel that you just literally heard reacting to, or just basically doing a soliloquy on the hatred of black men by black women in the black community. And I think that is something that we don't talk about enough. It's kind of like taboo to point this out, to speak this harshly on it. But I'm pretty sure that by the time this broadcast is over and we drive on some points, I'm pretty sure we'll be able to decipher, you know, how to navigate that conversation and in navigating that conversation to be sure that we, you know, cover all grounds and bases and grounds. You dig me? So, and why am I talking about this now? I'm talking about this largely because we have, as black men, identified, especially heterosexual black men, we have identified a lot of mitigating factors in regards to our relationship to the black community and where we stand in it. We're the ones who identified the concepts of misandry, anti-male hatred, specifically directed towards black males. So when we say anti-black male hatred, that's because the hatred doesn't just start with men. The hatred starts in them. In fact, the hatred starts prior to the womb, where women having selective abortions based on the gender of the fetus. Now, many of you know, you typically don't know the fetus, the whether or not the sex of the fetus until it's, I believe it's between four and five months. So it's pretty late stages. It's pretty much the late stages of pregnancy. All right. Then there's also these various movements that have doubled down in regards to the hatred towards black men with various different degrees and so forth. And it's not just specifically coming from within the community, because a lot of times we focus on it from within the community. And that is a great, great, you know, listen, we need to continue to focus on it from within the community. All right. And we'll talk more about why. But there's also aspects like this one that we don't like to talk about a lot. But hold on. It's up here somewhere. There's aspects that we don't like to talk about in regards to things that black men go through, right? And where the hell is in my damn clip? I'm talking and walking and walking and talking. But so all right, let me see. Hold up. Okay. I want y'all to pay attention to this one real quick. This is, as many of you know, Julio Fulio, the rapper Charles Jones, was murdered on June 23rd, 2024, right? Approximately 3 to 4 a.m. in the morning. There were 5 conspirators to his murder that we know of. 4 males, 1 female. Now, we spoke vehemently about Sean Gainthright last week, and we're going to talk about Sean Gainthright again this week. But I want y'all to hear about what's going on with one of these other cases. All right. So check this out. This is Alicia Andrews, who happened to be Sean Gainthright's girlfriend at the time. And I'm not sure whether or not I know she was pregnant at one point. I'm not sure whether or not she had the baby. But check this out. This
morning. Alicia Andrews is one of the 5 suspects charged in the murder of Jacksonville rapper Julio Fulio. Prosecutors say she helped track and follow Fulio before the ambush in Tampa. But during her trial, cameras caught her smiling and laughing, even applying makeup.
Go ahead and excuse Mr. Jimenez at this time.
Is this just nervousness or a sign she's not taking it seriously? What do you think?
When they were reporting about opening statements, I think they re-ran an interview with Mr. Malcolm and Mr. McClyman talking about the evidence this morning.
So she's in court right now, and not in this particular clip, and she has the giggles. She's smiling, laughing. They're applying makeup, doing her hair in court. And this is not unusual, right? There was a police officer, and I wish I would have actually thought about it prior to seeing this, but there was a police officer, a white female police officer, who had murdered a brother during a traffic stop. And this is a different case. White female police officer kicks in the door of a brother that was eating ice cream, sitting in front of his TV eating ice cream. She kicks in the door and shoots him, kills him. And then while she's at trial, female bailiff, the sister, the black female bailiff, goes over to her and brushes her hair. Yeah. And then on top of that, perfect drop. On top of that, even the dude's brother got up and said he wanted to give her a hug in the courtroom. It's like, allowed him to give her a hug during the trial for her killing his brother. But we see this oftentimes when the victims are black males, that this type of precedence takes place in the courtroom. Now, keep in mind, she had her hearing. They reduced her charges to manslaughter. So she didn't even get the maximum charges. All the other dudes, the other men that was involved in this heinous crime, they were all on trial facing the death penalty. They all got first degree murder. Somehow, some way, she was able to convince the jury that she was in an abusive relationship, and basically she was operating out of fear of retaliation because of how violent Sean Gainthright was, which I don't deny that the fact that this guy was violent. I mean, he's on video with an AR-15, pumping holes into another person, into 4 people, because 4 people got shot. Julio Fulio was the only one that died because he was the actual target. But the collateral spray caught 3 other people in that regard that was sitting in that in that hotel driveway. Now, I bring this up because we all remember when we covered Sean Gainthright's appeal, right? When he was appealing his sentence, and they played this at his hearing.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Well, good. Thank you.
Would you please turn and introduce yourself to our jury? My name is Raul S. Banasco.
Spell your last name for our court reporter.
B-A-N-A-S-C-O.
Thank you, sir. And how are you currently employed?
A variety of ways. I am a full-time jail administrator in Travis County Sheriff's Office in Austin, Texas.
And I'm going to speed this up a little bit because, you know, just for the sake of time, okay? But I just need y'all to understand something. That I need y'all to understand that when this guy's talking about this particular case, you know, I want y'all to pay attention to the differential in terms of the treatment, because technically speaking, all five of the assailants were in the cars. She helped map out the whereabouts of Julio Fulio. She actually went into a couple of the establishments that he was in to keep eyes on him. She assisted one of the males in walking around the parking lot as a couple to not give off the fact that they were actually they had Julio Fulio under their surveillance. This is a well planned out, thought out particular situation. And at times they were using her phone, so she wasn't a damsel in distress. She wasn't a hostage to the situation. She was a full-time participant. They even found old text messages from her saying Julio must die, you know. So I'm gonna let this guy finish talking.
Well, as an adjunct professor, and I do subject matter prison expert and jail security consulting work.
Can you please give our jury a summary of different facilities, jails, or prisons where you have worked?
I started my corrections profession in the state of Florida at the Central Florida Reception Center in Orlando, Florida, as a corrections officer. Spent 7 years at that facility, moved up into the classification department as a classification officer, senior officer, and supervisor, in which I got promoted in 1995 to Polk Correctional Institution in Polk City as a senior classification probation supervisor, then went on to be the assistant warden at Martin Correctional Institution, maximum security facility in South Florida. And then after 3 years, got promoted to an assistant warden 2-level in Tomoka Correctional Institution, Daytona Beach for 5 years, returned on a lateral to Central Florida Reception Center, and got promoted to a warden at Hernando Correctional Center, Correctional Institution in Brooksville for women. And then shortly, about a year and a half, got promoted to headquarters to the Department of Corrections, right, headquarters as director of staff development.
Let's speed this up a little bit.
And actually, going back, I went to...
To get into that kind of career.
To get in that profession, to be a corrections officer, of course, you have to have a high school diploma. I have an undergraduate degree in psychology, and also have my career...
I'm working in this field.
Over 41 years, over 40 decades, 4 decades.
Okay.
And I know you discussed you're currently working a capacity in a facility in Texas, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
And what is that?
I supervise over a jail population of 4,000 inmates and about 1,100 employees. It's the fifth largest jail in Texas.
Okay, so he's getting through all his credentials. We're going to speed up to the purpose of why he has actually been brought in by the prosecutor, I believe. No, excuse me. I believe this was actually the defense team to elaborate the difference between someone getting life in prison and being on death row in Florida.
State prison system in existence.
So those DOC procedures will be pretty consistent from facility to facility?
Correct. They're pretty consistent. Maybe some SOPs might change a little bit on the design and the age of the prison, but they all pretty much operate the same.
And you indicated one of them, correct me if I'm wrong, was the warden of Hernando Correctional Institution. And was that with youthful and adult women?
Yes, I had a population of 350 youthful offenders from the age of 15 to 21, as well as the adult women population as well.
Again, more of his credentials. See if I can get to the meat of this real quick.
Simon, I walk the units and the compound on a weekly basis. Also, keeping up with the Department of Corrections, particularly, still have a lot of friends and family members who work in the agency. So keep up with that in that way, but also keep up with the annual reports, as well as some of the changes that the agency goes through.
Coming.
As I'm familiar with a lot of the current going.
Are you able to give the jury that information based on what you've just described as far as how you keep up with those policies and procedures?
Yes, I am.
And before we get to that, so you're working now, other than what you described in Texas, but you're testifying here today, is that more in a consultant capacity?
Yes, it is.
What does that mean?
Consultant means not in my work capacity, it's my full-time as well.
And that all gets approved when we get you onto a case?
Correct. Everyone that I work with, regardless.
Jesus Christ. Well, oh my God, I thought I had this better set up than this, y'all. I'm sorry.
Now I'm going to get into some specifics. We talked about the difference between a life without parole sentence and what a death row inmate. Let's start with life without parole. Throughout your lengthy career in corrections, have you become familiar with how inmates serving a life without parole sentence are housed in the Department of Corrections?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and can you tell us physically how they are housed?
Well, all my assignments in the Florida prison system were all at LIFR facilities, so I'm very familiar with that layout. What happens is an individual who is sentenced to the Department of Corrections, particularly like in this case with Ms. Garthwright, he will go through a reception center process. He will be given an inmate number. That inmate number will remain with him for the remainder of his sentence while in the prison system. They will then be transferred after 6 to 12 weeks, in which they go through a reception process. They have to see all components, medical, mental health, social services, and classification, and we assess their custody level, and then we will assign them to vacant beds throughout the prison system. When that individual were to be received at a facility, let's say Tomoka Correctional Institution, which is a LIFR facility, holds all custody levels to close, that individual will be classified and assessed based on their skill set, their behavior, their prior behavior, whether it was in the county jail or in another system, in another agency, and then determine their housing assignment, determine their job assignment, in which every inmate that is serving a term of life will always have to be assigned a job assignment. So what that means is every inmate serving a life sentence is required to work up to 60 hours a week, whether it's cooking meals, preparing laundry, pushing about 100 lawnmowers, gasless, of course, keeping up with the day-to-day maintenance of that prison. That is a requirement, as well as following all the other rules and regulations as required by the agency.
So part of the classification, and I know probably just out of habit, you said you obviously aren't working there anymore,
department. But
the department will find a facility where Mr. Gathright would be the most useful?
Yes.
And
yes.
Fit in the best?
Yes.
And also have they have programs and things you mentioned, right?
Yes, they have programs.
Can you explain what a typical day in the life of an inmate serving life without parole would look like since they are required to work? What else does a day look like?
A typical life for an individual inmate serving in the Department of Corrections is they're woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning. We do a secure count. At that time, we will escort them to their appropriate chow hall, which is where they eat their meal. They have up to 10 minutes to sit and eat their meal. They will return back to their housing unit, in which we will conduct another count. And then we will allow them to go to the day-to-day operations. So inmates have work assignments. They are to report to their work assignments as scheduled. If they have call-outs for medical, classification, case management, they are to be accounted for, and we will go through the same process three times a day. So closer to the noon meal, around 11 o'clock, everyone will fall into their assignment. Those who are working, regardless of where you're at, we will do a count. We will go through the lunch meal, and then we'll repeat it again around 4:30 approximately in the evening so we can make sure everyone's accounted for. Then they return back to their housing unit, and after dark, they are all secured in secured housing, and no inmates are allowed to be out of those buildings unless there's an emergency with proper security, shackles, and handcuffs to whatever assignment they have to go. Otherwise, they remain in those housing units till the next day, in which it is repeated again.
So, and he basically goes to say that they do this until they die. There is no parole system. There is no pardon system. Well, there are pardon systems, but typically speaking, once you're in Florida, one of the worst places in America to go to prison, and we talked about this before, you're there until your last days, and then they have you in an unmarked grave. In other words, they put you in a pine box and bury you. And that's it. It's the end of it. Now, why do I bring that up? This was literally the argument that was utilized to keep this young man off of the death sentence, to keep him from off of death row. Alicia Andrews didn't go through any of that. The jury found some way to seek or find compassion for her. Now, I'm not saying any of them deserve compassion for what they did. And one of the plaintiffs that was found guilty in this particular case, I believe he was a relative of someone that was murdered by Fulio's gang. So he went out there, he was practically clapping and hoo-hotting and all sorts of shit when he was leaving out the courtroom because he was proud of the work that he did. Job well done, according to him. You know, and this was worth it for him. But why did she get special treatment? Why wasn't a prison expert brought into her particular trial to talk about all of the different ramifications, all of the different qualifiers that would make her have to work 60 hours a day for the rest of 6 weeks a day, 6 days a week for the rest of her life. How come she didn't have to go through all that? Right. So this is when we call, you know, this is because black men. When we say black men are at war, the second they walk out of their homes, nobody, if you're not a black man, you really can't understand or relate to the struggle that black men deal with, because we deal with just not just misandry from our women. We deal with systemic misandry. Everything we do is 10 times worse than the next person. The reaction and response. We're targeted. So half of the time, we don't even have to do shit. Shit finds us. And there's nobody that can offer you any compassion. I know there's a group that should offer compassion. And one of our elders, Shahrazad Ali, is going to explain this. You know, I was just checking the technology to make sure he's up. Listen to Sister Shahrazad Ali. And she's been spewing this particular cause, or not spewing, but she's been speaking on this cause for the last 40 years. All right, check this out.
I have a man who everybody hates. We hate him. His mama hating, his family hating, the white police hating, the regular white men and white women hating. This is a man who is hated by everyone. The only solace that God made for him was us. And when he comes to us and can't get any sanctuary at all, then he don't have no life. And then they win, because what they want to do is to destroy him and make us think that we are better than him, so that we will help the enemy destroy our own man that God gave us. We have the best man on earth. Everybody want him. He looked better than everybody. He's stronger than everybody. He is the best, the wisest, and the most beautiful. Now, of course, many of our men have been tricked by the enemy too. But since we are the mothers, we are the first face they see. We are the first person they talk to. We the first person to feed them. We do all of that and raise them up. And so if there's a silly man out here, he didn't grow up and be silly. He was silly as a little boy because his mother mismanaged him and didn't reparent him using the truth.
And that's something that we don't talk about. We don't want to utilize facts, statistics, or numbers. We don't want to talk about the origin stories of a lot of the young brothers who become villains in their own minds and in the eyes of society. We don't talk about their origin stories. We just call it like it is. There's no tutelage. There's no teaching. There's no programs in place. We just expect that black males become black men just because they grow to a specific size and stature, just because they're able to handle themselves in awkward situations out on the block, in the streets, and so forth, right? But there's no love for the brothers. None. Look, hold up. I'm not the only one talking about it. You have educators. Hold on. You know what? Before I go to that, why don't y'all pay attention to what this sister said about the time she paid her man a compliment? She paid her man a compliment and was just appreciative of just the way he handled his business within their family. Check this out. Hold on.
I did not realize how hated black men were by black women until I did my series, My Husband Was Raised by a Single Mom, and This Is What I've Learned. And then I did another video, Black Men in Therapy, and the comments from black women, wow, color me surprised. I kept receiving comments full of skepticism from men saying, are you really trying to give us grace? Are you really trying to understand us? And when I saw the women comment, I went, oh, wow, now it's starting to click. And it saddened me, but I now understand. And a lot of them brought up generalizations about black men creating broken homes and leaving more baby mamas and babies out there. But I feel like millennials and Gen Z are swinging the pendulum the other way from Xers and boomers, because they're trying to be in their children's lives. They're not trying to have these broken homes. They're trying to make it work with their partners. So now I understand comments like this, but I'm a big advocate for all men's healing.
So the comment said, it's definitely rare when a black woman takes time to hear and understand us. And it's true. It's true. I actually did this at a group therapy session. I wasn't running it, but I pointed it out. And even the brothers in the group didn't understand what the fuck was going on. That's how bad it is, y'all. And, you know, my bad. Because I could have sworn she was talking about her situation. But to talk about black men and just black men doing things, everybody's telling black men, y'all need to seek therapy. Y'all need to get help. And then when brothers go out and get the therapy, brothers go out and do the things that society is claiming, right? That's required. You know, it's just not good enough. It's just not good enough. And it'll never be good enough for somebody who has it in their mind to hate you. And I don't like saying this. This doesn't make me feel good saying this. And am I talking about 100% of the black female population in America? No. But I am talking about a vast majority. And what I will contend with is the fact that we have to stop making it so that we have to make a distinguishment that we're not talking about all groups and all people and so forth. We have to stop trying to make sure that we don't include or that everybody doesn't get pulled into the dragnet. Because what I'm starting to see is that the dragnet itself is necessary. The dragnet process is necessary. Why do I say that? Far too many times do we have example after example after example of black women not just talking in disrespectful or demeaning ways about black men. As y'all heard in the first clip, black women trying to conspire against the number one ops of black men, the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, you're trying to conspire with the Ku Klux Klan on how to humble us and how to take us down. And these were black divestors. That was a group of black women who are out there chasing white men, right? Shout out, more power to them. Go get your man or whatever. I don't care about that shit. What I care about is the fact that you're trying to weaponize this whole hatred of black men from groups that have historically lynched black men, historically burned black men at the stake, historically, you know, destroyed black towns off the basis that, foundationally speaking, a black man was involved in some sort of way with a white woman. Now keep in mind, these same Klan members killed black women too. There are stories. If you go to the Blacks and Wax Museum in Baltimore, Maryland, they have an exhibit. I don't know if they still have it, but I haven't been there in a while. They had an exhibit where a black woman was hanging from a tree. Formerly pregnant, because she was disemboweled by a white man, by a group of white men, Klan members, because she went to the police station complaining that the Klan had killed her husband. They dragged her out to that tree, hung her, disemboweled her, and when the fetus fell to the ground, they stomped the baby to death. They stomped the baby. But I digress. Let us continue. Check this scene out right here. And I'm trying to get this damn thing right. TikTok is a bitch when you try to get them to operate the right way. Hold on. There we go.
There's black women that walk around that think that their hatred of black men doesn't count as anti-blackness. Their definition of anti-blackness is if it affects men that's in the LGBTQ and black women. If it's a hatred or misandry or wishing the worst thing possible, you want him to get accused of something, you want him to lose all his resources, it's fine because he's dating a white woman. You're comfortable with them dying. You're wishing the police take care of them. Gender-based abortions. Why would I want to try to protect women or mourn or even try to fake mourning and grief for women that I know think like this? And the worst part is, it's not just the women who have the mindset. It's the women who don't have the mindset but are still cool with them, who still befriend them, who still hang out with them, who still act like this isn't what it is. The best way I can articulate why my view is, when I say specifically which type of black women are you talking about, this is the equivalent of y'all looking at me and being like, Jeff, I'd be cool with you, but you keep hanging out with these Klansmen. And I'm saying, Klansmen, they're not a bad deal. There's nothing wrong with them. And they're saying, Jeff, it's the Klansmen.
Black women do not care about black men, okay? Black women, unfortunately, sis, and I know y'all coming to beat me up, and I ain't talking about all of us, but I'm talking about the majority.
Here's what I hear in the back of my mind, so let me just go ahead and deal with it. Black women saying, well, look what they do, and look how they are, and look what they you know? And we unwittingly participate in the emasculation, the dehumanization, the devaluation, and the disheartening of black men because they didn't do it the way we wanted them to do it.
And once again, and you'll see this happen often. And shout out to, you know, Dr. Jeff St. James, for the point he made, right? Because how many of these misandrous black women roll tight with groups of black women that claim, oh, we love black men? Well, where's the counter argument? Where's the counter to this culture of anti-black male misandry? Yeah, you'll see a sector here or there, sprinkled here or there. But, you know, it's like trying to find, trying to find the needle in the haystack in regards. So the haystack is all the misandrists, and the needle is the small group of black women that are actually vocally opposed to misandry. And the first thing I've heard so many women say is, because when we take that stand, nobody stands with us. Bullshit. So many. The problem is they don't see or care to hear the support because they still care about what the sisterhood has to say. They still care about the misandrist welcoming them back into the fold after they say what they say. I mean, what was the woman, Cheyenne? And that's how much I care about that particular situation. I can't even remember the damn girl's name, right? Dr. Cheyenne or whatever, right? The only person that was talking about her credentials prior to all this thing, all this shit blowing up, was Corey Holcomb. He was the only one that identified, you know, her lesbian relationship. He was the only one that identified the fact that she never received a doctorate degree. I mean, yes, we covered it on the Shoulders of Giants. We covered it, you know, because when you went to her website, it said she was a psychology expert. It didn't say she was a registered or certified psychologist, right? But the mass hordes of the sisterhood did not care. As long as she was flaming Nick Cannon, as long as she was flaming Sterling Sharpe, I mean, not Sterling Sharp, Shannon Sharp. As long as she was flaming all these other brothers, right? As long as she was flaming all these other brothers and being a mouthpiece for the sisterhood, they didn't care. The second she came out and said that she meets more good black men than she has met good black women. Oh, goddamn. Oh, you want to talk about her? You want to talk about...
Me personally, I wouldn't take this level of disrespect.
The sisterhood said, "Let her hold my beer." And got up, came at her in droves. Now there are all these different women out there challenging her credentials. Didn't give a damn about that woman's credentials prior to her saying one thing. Now, that's crazy, right? But this is what I mean about the fact that the hatred of black men, to even acknowledge that there's good black men out there, drives some women insane. It drives them stark raving mad. Because I'm not going to be this brother. I'm not.
More do you want from me?
No. We're not going down that pipe. We're not going down that road. Okay? That's not happening. And so, you know, we got more. I mean, because what do we want out of this whole situation? Check this out, right? And this is how little, right? This is how early the misandry starts, right? Check this out.
Y'all, I swear for God, this is an epidemic for sure. So I'm sitting there talking to my nephew. He is literally 20 years old. So he has a girlfriend that he's been dating for 2 years. And he's a year older than her. So he just got done with his first year of college. And now she is going to college. So you know what she told him? She told him that she wants to break up for a year so she can do her freshman year at college. What the hell does that mean? So that means you were never serious about my nephew. You basically want to break up for a year so you can go to college and be a hoe. That's basically what I hear. Because my nephew is a great man. He has treated you like a freaking queen. So why would you want to break up with him for a year to go to college? Because you want to experience what it is to be a hoe in college? That's basically what I'm hearing. And that's what I told him. And I told him, it ain't no breaking up for a year. If you break up, you broke up for freaking forever. Period. I am so confused on how these young women get all of this information. Who says that to break up for a year? Like, where you get that from? Either your mama told you that, your sister told you that, or your auntie told you that, or your grandma might have told you that. You know what? You are going to lose a great man for forever because he ain't never coming back. Because guess what? His auntie over here gonna make sure he never comes back, because that right there is some BS. You ain't gonna break up with me basically to tell me that you want to explore. No. You ain't gonna do that on my nephew's time, because he ain't that type of guy. Because he is a great guy. And you know what? He is going to break up with you just like you requested so he can find the one that he's supposed to be with for forever. Okay? Because he ain't gonna waste his time with you. That is the craziest thing to me that I ever heard in my life. But you know what? We're gonna let her go on. We're gonna throw her back in the ocean so you can go fishing again to find your forever. Period.
And she's right. So a couple key points. I missed one that there was one from a previous clip that I wanted to go over when the sister was talking about how the millennials and the zennials and the A's are changing the dynamic in terms of like single parent households. First and foremost, the statistics are the stats. And you can go to blackdemographics.com to find out the statistics on any statistics concerning black community, black relationships, so forth and so on. Blackdemographics.com, shows that 54% of black men, period, all age ranges, have never fathered a child. It also speaks to the fact that of the black men that have children, specifically black men that are 68%, right, of the black men have cohabitated with the mother of those children. But the vast majority of the black women, the 68% of single mothers in the black community, right? They are basically all concentrating on the same 15 to 20% of black eligible black men, because the other the married population of black men is between 33 and 35%. So you do the math, 54 plus 35. Okay? Now technically speaking, that's like 90, close to 90%. All right? But we'll give or take, because some married men have children outside of their relationship, outside of their marriage. So that's why we couple it, we round it off to 20%. But hey, there's also another aspect that nobody talks about, that black women were seeded by men who are not black to produce 1.2 million more children than black men in the black community. So when we talk about the single parent epidemic, it is not black men. All right. And don't forget, women give access to sex. Unless she's being sexually violated, she provides access to sex. So, and he can't even put on take off a condom if she says she doesn't want it off. I forget what they call it. It's a term for that. Not ghosting, but it's a term for that. Somebody will tell me. Somebody will say it. All right. But however, this particular video, well, I'm watching the video, you're listening to it. This particular clip, you notice how Auntie got mad when it was her nephew? Now, I'm not saying she was wrong about anything, but why does it always take for it to be her nephew? Why does it always take for it to be her kin? Right? Now, listen to what this elder is trying to, you know, run by the females, the future females of America. You can tell this is a college classroom. Check this out.
Are these good qualities?
Hold on, I'm gonna have to. You won't be able to hear this one over there. So let me see. All right. So let's start that one off again.
Are these good qualities?
No.
Do you want to experience this? This was your definition of the things that baddies have to do. They have to be sexy 24/7. Right? And does that mean they have to just look sexy, or do they also have to do things?
Well,
this is a whole other part of the conversation. I gotta ask y'all the right questions. So it's not just that you have to look super sexy, feel and perform super sexy, but do you have to have sex?
In my bad, this looks like high school students, but I'm old, so I can't really tell. All right, proceed.
Okay, let me ask this. Maybe you don't have to, but do you think a lot of people that participate in the baddie culture do?
Yes.
Oh, do tell. Why? What makes you think this? Are you just judging these women? Are you jealous of these women? Are you thinking you too good for these women, or do you know these are facts?
No, I just like have so much to say on that, because like I feel like a lot of lustful men are like very rich these days, especially like older white men.
Yeah.
And a lot of women seem to be attracted to them now just because of their money, and they're like, oh, if I stay with him, oh, he'll set me up for life. Mm-hmm. If I do this for him, then he'll do this for me. And it's just...
So technically, that is a form of prostitution, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Am I putting that extras on, or is that what you think?
No.
So if you're doing something transactional, that's kind of like a culture of prostitution. Okay.
Wait a minute. So all of these things you're telling me, baddies who may go a step further and actually begin to use sex as a survival tool, because that's what a lot of will say, right? What do they say to justify that? Hey, I'm getting what?
Money.
Money, what?
Oh, I was just going to say, like, that's what I feel like Summer Walker, like, she was, like, not getting canceled, but, like, that's just her whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she uses that as an excuse.
Yeah,
And this happens. Now let's talk a little deeper. You guys have some music artists that you like, right? You told me about the reality TV characters, but do they kind of uplift this baddie culture and this kind of prostitution kind of like culture, or is it just me tripping? Tell me how. How are you seeing it, not just in reality TV, but you're also seeing it in the music that's kind of normalizing, hey, if you want to be a baddie. I think Cardi B has a song called Fuck 'Em and I Get Some Money. Is that an example?
I keep trying to beat that damn TikTok. So, but, okay, so, and when she had a classroom with girls, and she's trying to sort of instill some values, or at least trying to point out the hot girl, or what did they call it? The baddie culture, right? But that's what these young men have to deal with now. So the clip that you heard before, where the young girl told her boyfriend that she needed to have a year off in college before she get back to him. What do you think she was going to do? And where do you think she got that information from? Another measurement of the sisterhood. And you don't treat the guys, if you have love for them, you don't treat them like that. So, what am I saying? I'm saying that there's a case that could be made, and it has been made. It's just we're too afraid to talk about it. That there is an overwhelming hatred of black men. Now, we know that society itself hates black men. But we've been, laden, especially the black conscious community, will not acknowledge the misandry that goes on towards black men. That's why one of the reasons I left it, they allow misandry to go on and they just look at it like, oh, come on, man, she was just upset. Bullshit. So let's talk about it real quick. You have Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant and his daughter crashed into the mountainside in a helicopter along with about 7 other people. And then there was hordes of black women celebrating the death of Kobe Bryant. You had the Ice Cube effect. When Ice Cube went on the talk show, the Queens of Fox Soul or something, I don't know. Y'all know the show I'm talking about. And he produced his plan for Black America to them. And the first thing they said was, well, if there's nothing in it for black women, it doesn't count. In other words, they don't even identify as riding with black men. Even though when black men spew their politics, or when black men focus politically speaking, it's for the entirety. The benefits are for the entirety of the black community. Black men were out there just like with black women talking about reparations. They weren't talking about reparations for just black men. All right. We have, of course, the ominous death of Kevin Samuels, in which yearly both black women and anti-black male misandrists, pandering black males, celebrate this man's death to the point where it generated a response from black men, because we really knew that even though it was Kevin Samuels, it could have been any black man in that coffin, and this has been a response. Then which pretty much opened the floodgates for the Passport Bros movement, because SYSBM, Save Yourself Black Man, has been a hashtag that has started to spread, because a lot of brothers have lost faith that they can actually achieve the black American dream here in America dealing with our so-called counterparts. And I have no ill will towards black women, but it's amazing that when you speak the truth and then when the truth hurts, all of a sudden you don't like black women. You hate black women. Your mother's black. Yeah, and I love my mother to life. I was there for her last breath. But I will never love being disrespected. I will never love being taken for granted. I will never love when, a person that's supposed to be reciprocal of my impact is really the ops in disguise. Never. And it is a black woman job. This is a job of black women to solve this riddle, because black men can't. We can't solve this riddle. The only way black men have been solving this riddle is by abstaining, by walking away. This whole concept of building a black community falls short. Why? Because it's consistently sabotaged by black women who believe that black women and children provide the family unit, and black men are strictly for utility purposes to protect and provide, whether it's penis, produce, products, or otherwise. So with that said, man, fellas, keep your head up. Know that, you know, glorious days are upon us. And always understand, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I'm out of here.